Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.
What came next is intended for mature audiences only. Episodes discuss topics that can be triggering, such as emotional, physical, and sexual violence, animal abuse, suicide, and murder. I am not a therapist, nor am I a doctor. If you're in need of support, please visit somethingwaswrong.com/resources for a list of nonprofit organizations that can help. Opinions expressed by my guests on the show are their own and do not necessarily represent the views of myself or Broken Cycle Media. Resources and source material are linked in the episode notes. Thank you so much for listening. It has been a great honor to host Mike Sachs and Kelly G on what came next prior to this conversation. Kelly first shared his experiences of abuse in episodes 51 and 52, entitled Against Big Odds and What Happens Next, which aired in January of 2024. Episodes 109 and 110, entitled Silence is an Incubator and Up to Us to Protect, were released over a year later and highlight Mike's abuse experiences with the same hockey coach nearly a decade prior to Kelly. The two men, united by sharing their experiences in the media and possessing a similar mission to change the world, created a nonprofit organization called Survivors for Change. In this special episode of What Came Next, both men join us again to share about their process of developing a life-changing program for survivors and their support systems in the wake of their healing. The Broken Cycle Media team extends our immense gratitude to the Survivors for Change team. It's survivors and organizations like theirs that will enable this vicious cycle of abuse to finally end.
Hi, my name is Michael Sachs. I'm the founder and chairman of Survivors for Change, and I'm here with our executive director, Kelly G.
Hi, everyone. I'm Kelly G. I've had the fortune of doing a couple episodes with Amy last year and really happy to be back on and talking with all of you today.
Kelly and I were both sexually abused by the same hockey coach when we were younger. This happened about a decade apart. When I finally wrote my letter and came forward and said what happened to me, Katie Strang from The Athletic ran an article. Katie was very concerned about Kelly, but Katie couldn't tell me who Kelly was because she had to keep the integrity of the story. So finally, when Katie broke Kelly's story, she was able to give me all of his information. I had spoken to Kelly that day I told him I was going to come out and we were going to go golfing. I met Kelly at the golf course. He kicked my butt in golf. And after that, we went out to eat. Kelly took me to his favorite restaurant, which was this little Mexican restaurant in Denver, Colorado. While we were talking at that dinner, I noticed that Kelly appeared to be having an emotional flashback. And I was just trying to get him through it. By that, I was just trying to speak real softly and change the subject and get that anxiety out of him. To do that, I had told him about this idea I had, that I wanted to start a not-for-profit that we could help other survivors. See, I lived in silence for 35 years. The way I handled it was textbook the wrong way to do it. You have to come forward and say something. So I had told Kelly I had this idea. I wanted to help people. Kelly just looked at me. He had this smile on his face. And he goes, "Mike, that's what I do for a living. I build companies. I know how to do this." I says, "I don't have much, but I will put my whole retirement into this." And we didn't have a name yet, but that day, Survivors for Change was born.
That was a really rough time for a lot of us. Speaking for myself, it was pretty dark. Things were looking pretty bleak. My mental health was in really poor condition. And I just didn't know where to go with any of the feelings and unboxing all that. I had already done such a thorough job of burning my life down around me as a result of the trauma. It seemed like there was just no real place for me to take what I went through and do something positive with it until Mike really flipped those lights on in my head. When we met, we noticed right away just how many things we had in common. Mike had already met some of the other survivors and shared some stories about how relatable everything was. We also recognized right away just how healing it was to be heard and seen, understood, and not judged. When he brought up the idea, we knew pretty quick that we had to put something together. Mike spent a bunch of time in Denver in the small one-bedroom apartment. He just came in, plopped on the couch, and we spent like a month brainstorming, talking, and researching what's out there, what are these issues, and what do we want to do about it. And we were angry. And we were fresh off of a pretty big experience with the national expose on our trauma and our abuse. We had a lot of different ideas. I mean, we were even throwing around ideas about buying a Sprinter van, turning it into like a travel camper, and going around the country and finding bad guys, finding these bad actors and bringing accountability to them. But we had to be level-headed about this. We were like, men need help. Society's finally at a place where they're willing to talk about this and they're ready. But what we realized right away was that even though we were passionate about making sure that male survivors felt represented in this space, right out of the gate, it was for everybody. How relatable this was transcended gender gaps. I've got a stack of these college rule notebooks that have the whole story of Survivors for Change built into it. From initial ideas, we didn't know what to call it. We'll figure it out as we go. It's going to come to life at some point. We realized we had to get a pro. We had to get somebody that understands the space and how these models are created. We started making phone calls and asking for people that knew people and just utilizing our network. Actually, one of our lawyers, Lee Jacobson, was the one who aligned us initially with somebody who heard a little bit about the project. Her name was Michelle Cronin. We met with Michelle, realized right away that she was our fit. She's got fight in her. She's brilliant. She's got a tremendous resume and background of success in the nonprofit space. She's a board member with Feed America, and she is an agent of change. And then bringing in Elaine Wider on our legal side, they helped us understand what a program actually looks like in this. They're like, it's right in front of you. It's exactly what you're doing. It's connecting together. As opposed to looking at this as a crusade, look at it from a change standpoint, from a person-to-person perspective. And the power of peer support, something that you can offer right now without funding, without anything else. The one thing you can do is connect with each other. And they were right about that. Michelle, our strategist, we're on a phone call and it was starting at that point eating me up. And I'm just like, we need an identity. And she's like, you're both survivors. That's where it comes from. What you're working towards is change. Why don't you call it Survivors for Change? Mike and I just looked at each other like, how in the world? Of all the things that we went through, how did we not get to that point? that was a really cool moment. Coming up with the name and to build our logo, which is something we're really proud of, it really tells the story of who we are in a snapshot. That was one of my favorite parts of the development process, was finding our identity like that.
That was a very neat process. We came up with the Rooted Man, which is based on the aspen trees. We were up in Breckenridge, and Kelly took us for a walk in the woods. Kelly started telling me about the aspen trees and how they share a root system. And I looked at him and I said, that's what we're doing. That's what all the survivors are doing. We're sharing a root system till their roots take hold and they can stand on their own.
And that's really where our peer supports program really stemmed from, was just this need that people had to be heard and feel safe in telling their story. And this was really centered around advocacy and awareness. When we first started, we didn't know how it was going to be taken publicly. We were scared about the pushback that we were going to get. Sure enough, when we did our first press conference a few months later, the floodgates just opened up. We heard it over and over again. I thought it was only me. I never understood that this happened to not only other men, but so many others, and how common it was, and just understanding how to take all of that input and all those feelings and all those new connections and emotions. We want to make sure that the hockey community as a whole knows how much we've appreciated all their support. It was so scary coming out with the story and just feeling the shame. When you go through something like this and you spend that many years hating yourself, you tell yourself some pretty evil things about you that aren't necessarily true. I thought that I was going to be rejected by the community, and I could not have been more wrong. We're just so grateful for all of that support that we've gotten from so many people. We realized that people needed help with alignment, whether it was therapy for them, for their family members, or legal support or advice. We started networking with people and helping them understand where they're at on their healing journey and what it is they need. In the years since, and we've had over 500 people now come to us and share their stories with us, which I don't know how that sounds from a number standpoint, but I can tell you it's a big number. You can see these lives change right in front of you.
With people calling us, the one thing I noticed is that everybody was pretty much beyond the statute of limitations. Some people just called to let us know that it happened to them, and that was it, and we haven't heard from them again. I actually had one person call me from our podcast that you and I did, Amy, and that person was beyond the statute of limitations as well, but they found the courage to call the police and let them know what happened to them, even though it was after the statute of limitations. I just wanted a place where people can come and feel support.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even. Like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations, because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
We realized very clearly after we started our work, there's a desperate lack of education and training, specifically in the cultivation of healthy and safe relationships. There's so much compliance level training let's just talk about youth sports, which is our primary focus area. So much compliance training around technical and tactical development. But there wasn't really any training on the different social constructs, social media, online gaming platforms. Kids are introduced to things like sex so much younger now than even we were back in the 80s and 90s. We don't have enough understanding built in for our adult communities, our leadership that are charged with safeguarding and protecting our kids. We have to stop wondering why these things are happening when we're not equipping people. We just give them an expectation and that's just not good enough. We got to backwards engineer what is going on here so we can have a better understanding of what the root of this evil really is. There's these evil predators out there, but these situations were a product of a broken environment and a culture issue. We spend so much time and resource treating something that's already poisoned. You put in the extra work, the hard work, and go back and treat it right at the source. So now you don't have to go in and hand to fist fix every little thing as it comes on its way out. We want to prioritize prevention. But if we're just prioritizing prevention as a product of fear, these bad actors and predators will find ways around that broken navigation system. We'll always be in a constant place of just reacting after things have already happened. But if we start at the very beginning and we're helping develop and grow stronger, healthier people with a better understanding of their influence and effects they have on these people's lives, we see that education and training as a powerful form of prevention. And that's where our education program really started to evolve, focusing on the human component that exists through three primary audiences in sports, which is your coaches, your parents, and your players. In sports, there's no real education curriculum for parents or players, primarily focused on coaches. So we thought bringing in a connected approach to how we want to help train people to see each other and hear each other and treat each other like complete human beings and bring them all together with a level of consistency and understanding between these three curricula was really kind of a revolutionary idea. I was trying to find subject matter experts to help us take our beta curriculum that we had to another level. It was evidence-based at the time, but the literature that we were using, from our opinion, was too dated. It just needed more. It was on the right track, not there yet. So we were out trying to find subject matter experts. That's how Matt and I got connected at the time. And it's just been fireworks since. The growing relationship and partnership that we've developed with the University of Kentucky College of Social Work runs directly through Dr. Matt Moore, who's the associate dean there. Not only is he one of my favorite people on the planet, he is just a champion. He's an amazing person. He's been coaching Division I tennis for 20 years. He's worked in hockey. His kids played hockey. A major focus of his lifelong work is making sports safer, healthier places. That relationship has really been a gift for us at Survivors for Change. It's just been such a game changer.
Survivors for Change was incorporated in September of 2020, and we met Matt Moore about a year ago.
It feels like we've known him forever.
It does. The time has been flying by, but we're getting so much done. It's amazing how the dominoes are starting to fall. And I would say within the past 3 years now, we've really put our foot on the accelerator just through the relationships.
Whether you're a coach, you're a parent, or you're a player, if you're an administrator, director, a board member, maybe your program doesn't have a rules and ethics committee. Maybe you don't have a standardized safe sport reporting process. There's various needs that these organizations have, and we can help support you with those materials and help you with your planning of it. If you're a community member on any level in the youth sporting ecosystem and you have questions, there's a good chance that we got an answer for them. And if we don't, we're going to find one. We're going to be doing online workshops with the power of these online meeting platforms. Obviously, we want to have as much in-person contact as we can, but where it's not available, we're still going to be offering first-of-its-kind training. Every workshop is followed up by an online module that these coaches get access to. They have their workbooks. We workshop different ideas and questions and help them kind of put things into the right spaces. Then when we send them this online module, which is beautifully done by Octane Rich Media, it's fully interactive video where they can go back and take their workbook and follow the same process that we went through in the workshops. And it gives them an opportunity to really refine their thought process step by step by implementing this hybrid model. Through our pilot program, we went through the IRB process, which is Institutional Review Board, which is the process that you go to when you do a study that ensures that the data is being treated with the highest levels of standards. And it allows for instance, your studies to be published and peer reviewed, which is a really big deal. We got our data back from the IRB. The shift in growth along the coaching life skills scale and the coaching efficacy scales that we primarily used for measurement was off the charts as far as the impact and the change that we were seeing from what our communities were learning and then taking and directly implementing into everyday practice in life.
The parents' curriculum is close to my heart. There's no playbook for that parent on what to do. They're almost at the mercy of the coach, like my father and my mother were. I wanted to educate the parents. My father ended up making my abuser my legal guardian, which sounds crazy. I still can't believe it to this day. My father and I didn't have a healthy relationship. This has taken a toll on me mentally, and I don't want to see other kids go through that. Also, you're not just looking out for your kid, you're looking out for all the kids. We're the old crowd now, and it's up to us to protect these kids. I'm going to be 58 years old this year. So these young parents, they're kids to me too. So I wanted to help them and help them navigate this. The buy-in from the coaches during the curriculum, I was blown away by it. These guys know there's a problem. They want to fix it. There are more good people in coaching than there are bad people. The one bad apple spoils the bunch. And I don't think that's right because we have so many good coaches. So if we can teach the coaches what to look for as well, they can help us weed out these coaches that are crossing lines that they shouldn't be crossing.
When we look at the coaches curriculum, one of the first things, lesson one, is building a coaching philosophy. We genuinely believe in the power of identity, because when you have that kind of identity and you really put the thought and the work into understanding what your gifts are, one of the things that I always try to teach in our classes is we spend so much of our time and our effort focusing on shortcomings and failures and weak points. As a coach, it was always about understanding the best parts of who the person is and help them be so great at what they're good at that the shortcomings and weak points don't even matter anymore.
Elementally, if you think about it, abuse happens and often it disembodies us, which in disembodying a victim, they're also losing their identity. You're an object at that point. Your identity doesn't matter. So when you immediately begin with the empowerment of offering someone a way to identify and to reclaim or even claim, period, any of their power, that's combating the abuse too.
That's beautifully said. Keep that in there, please. Because if you don't have that sense of self, when you go into the training development, you just become part of a machine. And that's one of the cultural things that we need to break in sports is factory lining. Players. Got to stop looking at kids like assets. The lessons that you learn from sports, they last for a lifetime. We have a major responsibility in these young people's lives to take that extremely seriously. And that needs to be the priority, not the output of skill development. That skill development should be a product of consistent work and repetitive habits and behaviors and understandings and expectations. That's going to come, but we have to start at the human level first. And to do that, we have to understand who we are if we're going to do it effectively. We're really excited to not only roll out our full curriculum for the coaches, but pilot our parents program in this coming season. While we're doing that, at the end of the parents pilot, we'll be starting our beta testing on the youth program. And then the following year, it just follows that cycle. And it's full rollout of coaches and parents in the following season. And the pilots for the kids. And then that's also when we're starting to move into new markets. Boundaries are just not well enough defined in these spaces between the relationships, between coaches and players, between coaches and parents. What does a role of a parent look like to a youth athlete? We haven't really given them any model to build that around. And without that model, you can't have well-established boundaries. And when you don't have well-established boundaries, that's when lines start getting abused and crossed. Institutional betrayal is a thing. That's part of the reason it's so important to have the trifecta curriculum, the three elements between the coaches, the parents, and the players, and have communication systems that are reflective so they know how to talk to each other. So players, parents, and coaches all know where their role and responsibility starts and where it stops. That makes accountability more effective and efficient in the institutional level because there's clearly defined lines. This line was crossed, as opposed to, is it just a parent making something up? Or is the kid just ticked off because they're not getting the playing time they want? All things that do happen, by the way, which is scary for coaches to have a broken reporting system that can be weaponized against them. So establishing these boundaries and these roles within the ecosystem is such a critical piece of creating a safe and healthy environment. And it really boils back down to me for boundaries and boundary violations. The programs, for instance, that we piloted this year in Chicago with the Chicago Mission, who's led by Gino Cavallini, and the Chicago Hawks, who's led by Steve Pops, have very strong structure and communication systems, very healthy environments, which is part of the reason we were so lucky to work with them as we're testing and measuring our programs. Because if we can go into where people are already doing it the best and show that there's a level of impact and identify where the elements are needed, even at the top level, that streamlines the whole effect and work downstream as you get into newer programs or less equipped programs or emerging programs that just don't have those things in place. There needs to be a better standardization to the policies and procedures that institutions and organizations have in place for boundary violations per community members, like coaches, players, or parents. So that's something that we're actively working on and is part of what we're calling our Navigators program. They're going to be working in concert with our partnering programs. Navigators are in-person liaisons that are going to be certified and trained through our platform. And they're going to be experienced, very well vetted, respected members of the athletic community, as well as mental health professionals and social workers. So you're going to have a mental health professional that oversees the well-being of these programs and the local representative of that sport, like in hockey, that helps navigate this complicated system that is our game. So people have a place where they can go and they can talk, they can get advice, they can get help when there is something that needs to be reported. They can make sure that there's oversight to that process. So there's not the same kind of fear and stigma of retribution that people feel. That is one of the primary reasons that people don't speak up and that these things boil over the way that they do. People are scared to report. So by implementing our Navigators program, we hope to minimize how much stress and pain goes back onto these community members when they do need help in these times of need or when boundaries are broken. University of Kentucky, having a partner like that, the peer support that we get from them and guidance and leadership has put us in a position where this has become very scalable. We're piloting it here in a controlled environment and a situation where we know we're building the best possible program. This partnership is what really is the catalyst to allow for that level of scale. We've built a very thorough model that allows for us to take this to a national level scale over the course of about 5 or 6 years. That's something that's really made possible through the champion work that we're getting with our partners. It's not just for hockey. It is right now, but the way that the curriculum is built in such a way that we can rebrand it, repackage it for other sports, and try to get this really life-changing and life-saving development and training out to as many people as we possibly and ethically can. I have learned so much in this process. There's a lot of moving parts. You have to try to simplify any machine if you don't want it to break. Moving parts are the points of failure. So how do you take something that's so complicated and put it into a well-oiled machine that's sustainable and consistent? That experience of this subject matter experts and Dr. Moore have really taken it to that level and shown effectiveness.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
The feedback we've gotten from our community on the work that we're providing, everybody that would hear about it early stage are like, okay, there's something to this. And then the people that actually went through the pilot were like, wow, where has this been? We have people that are coming back to us and saying like, if only we would have had this when we were kids. How is this not the first thing that we're getting when we're being taught to be coaches? And the immediate impacts of some of the things they learned, we tried to reciprocate that with not only giving them good training, but also listening to them. They gave us a lot of feedback as we went on. And one of the cool things about having this kind of support from so many programs and a community like this is now this curriculum isn't static. It's living and breathing. It's something that we're going to continuously iterate and change and update, make sure that we're listening to the community needs, their wants, what worked, what didn't, and adapting it so we can always be sharpening that blade so we can cut right through to the expectations we have of how this will positively affect their community members and their teams. And to see that now come alive in these major partnerships and sponsorships that we have that are still on the table. Wish I could say who right now. We're so weeks out from putting any ink on paper. We'll update you guys with that. Make sure you follow us on social media. That's going to really take this to the next level.
As a founder, I had an idea. I didn't know if it was going to work. I just knew I wanted to do something and I wanted to help people. And to have an institution like the University of Kentucky College of Social Work say, yes, this needs to be done. Man, I felt 10 feet tall. That's the only way to say it. This is the best thing I've ever done in my life. And to have people buy into it, it's pretty special for me because I just want to help people. I don't want kids feeling the way Kelly and I and all these survivors feel. This took us from victims to survivors. That was the one thing Kelly always said. We're not going to get too big too fast. We're not going to lose control of this thing. And he was 100% right about that.
Mike and I are going to be in a better position now where we can get more involved in the advocacy and reform side of things. There's so many issues that start at the legislative level, laws that need to change, laws and protections that are in place that support institutional betrayal, that support predatory behavior, that don't recognize the realities of survivorship and how long it takes people to come forward. So that's something that we really want to get involved with. We want to see the change. We demand it. With local representatives, state representative, and national representatives, we feel like there is a culture of change that's ready to be accepted, but the movement needs leadership. So that's definitely something we want to do more of as we scale this out.
What's been most healing about creating the nonprofit, and what's the hardest thing about it?
The most hard part about it is that we're always in it, if that makes sense. We personally take the phone calls from survivors that contact us. You listen to their stories and it affects you. The most satisfying part of it is that same person seeing them get through what they're going through in that moment and helping them get with the police to make their report. So it's the same thing as the hardest, but it's also the most rewarding for me.
I sometimes have an issue with stopping to smell the flowers. It's something that I'm trying to work on as part of my personal growth. I would have to say the most impactful thing for me is really seeing the lights come on with survivors. You can just feel it lift. That's really something else. As a fellow survivor, it's just something that helped me put things in perspective. To see that and then put it into practice and put it into work and be able to replicate it and see it happen once, twice, 10, 100, 500 times is really something else. That's been really big for me. Fundraising in nonprofit land is really, really challenging as an executive in this space. That's a really taxing part of the business, but ultimately the hardest part is what Mike said too. I'm getting better at it, but the first few years were really challenging, just trying to understand my own journey and what happened to me and the years of destruction that it caused to try to take responsibility and heal while also trying to be strong and be a leader in something like this was very challenging. When you're coming into terms with survivorship, be patient with your moves. I don't necessarily recommend people to jump headfirst into that pool because it is a lot. Those are the real pathways to healing. Finding a good therapist. I get why people think that that's some kind of weakness, but it's just not. You find the right therapist that's a fit for you. All of a sudden you turn around and you got a shed full of tools to do any job you need. It's some of the most proactive work we can do on ourselves.
What's a piece of advice or words of wisdom that you'd offer people that want to start a nonprofit organization?
I'm a big advocate of writing things down, and not just because it's good practice. It helps for retention. It slows down your thinking process enough to where you start to formulate things and they're not just spilling out of you, ideas and visions and hopes and dreams. Start simple. I really recommend that people also get involved. Go volunteer. Contact RAIN. Contact NAMI. Contact a local nonprofit that works in or at a similar field that you're interested in getting involved with. Get a pulse for what it's like to be an agent of change, to work in an environment like that while you're developing and fleshing out your idea, because it's inevitably going to change as you learn more about the business structure. It's a business. It's a lot of work. If you go and you support a local organization and you learn some of that firsthand experience as a volunteer, it's going to reward you 100-fold as you go in starting your mission. To do this kind of work, your team is everything. Investing in your team and then empowering your teammates. My job from this chair, that's really my primary focus, is get the best players on the roster you can that fit these roles and then give them what they need to be great at what they're great at. Because if you build the right team, you can do big things, but you got to have the team.
It's a lot of work. I wouldn't have been able to do this without Kelly. Kelly has the business mind for it. It's a selfless thing. You have to have the mindset of that you are doing this for other people, not for yourself.
You guys are definitely doing something incredibly special, and I'm grateful for your continued sharing with our community. How can they support you and your cause?
Let's start with what's simple. Our website, which is www.survivorsforchange.org, spelled out with F-O-R. Go to our website, sign up. We're pretty modest with our newsletters. We don't spam anybody, but there's always really good information that comes out on there. Obviously, follow us on social media. We're really ramping that up with messaging campaigns and just tons of really good just information. You can find us on Facebook at the S4C, numerical 4, and we are S4C at Instagram. Please follow us. You're going to start seeing more and more messaging campaigns coming out from there. Just even with likes, follows, and shares, you're helping us be seen by people that otherwise wouldn't see us. And you never know which one of those people needs us the most. We're starting to see that more and more as our presence is growing. We're a 501c3, so we're a public charity. We rely on donations. This kind of business is not for the faint of heart. It's difficult. We have to get this, and people deserve to have this. And that's something that we're really, really steadfast on as much as we possibly can, is we have to get it to them. But in order to do that, we need financial support. And we've had some wonderful financial support from various backers and grant funding. But really, we can't do it without public donation. If this is meaningful to you, if you're in a position willing to give, you can do it right at our website. We furnish a 990, so you can see where every penny goes. You can see how that goes back into the community and goes directly to the work.
We know times are hard for people. So a like, follow, and share on all of our social media really gets that algorithm going for us. We get in the eyes of more people that way. So if you can't donate financially, like, following, and sharing is just as good.
The other thing we always encourage people to do is, if you got kids in sports, ask them about their reporting systems, ask them about their coaching education, ask them about resources that they might have to give you as a parent or to your kids. If you have questions, if you're not sure where to go with something, go right to our website and send us a message. You're probably going to hear back from me directly if you do that. We'll support you in any way we can. And as we grow this and we scale it out, our programs are getting closer to you every day. So make sure that you stay in touch. And if you need help, we're here. All you got to do is ask. And obviously, if you're a survivor and just want to share your story, or you want to meet somebody else that's just gets it. If you go on to our webpage, you're going to see a couple different options as far as how to connect to us. There's also mental health resources that are available on there and crisis hotlines.
We'll never turn anybody away.
There's so much stuff that's just in motion that there's no doubt that we'll have another captivating conversation about what happens next as this grows, because it's fixing to go through a major growth spurt. Looking back now at almost 5 years ago, sitting in that Mexican restaurant to where we're at now is pretty humbling to see. And it all came from us showing up for each other, starting with Mike and Katie and the other survivors and Brent and Chris. I really look back on it with a lot of gratitude for their willingness to come and get me before it was too late. It's important to us that we thank your listeners and your community for being so supportive from my podcast through Mike's into this one. We've gotten followers, we've gotten comments, we've gotten love and support from them. We want each of you to know how much that means to us. Amplifying our voice like this, I mean, it's really special. It's not something we take lightly. We're really grateful.
That's the survivor community making a change right there, helping each other.
We hear you. We really appreciate you all. And you, Amy.
I would like to thank everybody as well. I would like to come back and give an update on what we're doing, because we've got a lot of things that are in the works. Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. What Came Next is a Broken Cycle Media production, co-produced by Amy B. Chesler and Tiffany Reese. If you'd like to help support What Came Next, you can leave us a positive review, support our sponsors, or follow Broken Cycle Media on Instagram at Broken Cycle Media. Check out the episode notes for sources, resources, and to follow our guests. Thank you again for listening.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.